And now, from the gleaming spires of Chicago, broadcasting to Niflheim, Svartalfheim, Olympus, throughout the nine worlds and beyond, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. You are tuned to the immortal sounds of Radio Free Asgard.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 132, coming at you from beautiful Chicago, Illinois. My name is Tom Harris. Welcome along to the show. So before we get started, just want to wish everybody a very, very happy new year. This, of course, is going to air the day after Christmas. It's still before Christmas when I'm recording this because I have to record things, you know, a few days in advance anyway, unless I'm running really behind. But by the time this is airing, it'll be almost time to prepare for New Year's. So I just want to wish everybody a very happy 2014. And 2014 is bringing some interesting news for Radio Free Asgard. Yeah, I've been hinting at it for the last couple of weeks. I think now is the time when I can actually officially announce it. I've actually signed a contract. It's not all a done deal yet. I could still fall through, I suppose. But I'm not thinking it's going to at this point. So I'm sure that a lot of you out there have heard of C2E2. C2E2 is the Chicago Comics and Entertainment Expo. It's one of the two big comics conventions here in Chicago. It's the newer and, to my mind, more comics oriented. I think that, you know, there's another convention that happens in the fall, which of course is Wizard World / Chicago Comic Con. They've been here for a long time. They tend to go more towards the entertainment guests, you know, the people who've done TV shows and movies and that sort of thing. C2E2 is a lot more focused on comics and graphic novels and that sort of thing. Not so much on the, you know, on the movie stuff and the toys and that. You get a lot of that too. C2E2 is the younger convention. I think this is the fifth or the sixth year that it's been here in Chicago. Pete and I go every year. We've been at every single C2E2 since it started here. And this is going to be my very first year as an exhibitor at the convention. So Radio Free Asgard is going to have table space. And if you're coming to C2E2, I really hope you'll stop by. We are going to be over in Podcaster's Alley, which is, I guess, adjacent to Artist's Alley. I haven't really seen any kind of setup yet, but it does sound like it's going to be a really good time. I'm hoping to talk to some of you guys, hoping to talk to some professionals over the course of the weekend. And I will be there all 3 days. C2E2 is going to be taking place April 25th through the 27th of 2014. It's never too soon to get your tickets. I think that last year was really crowded. And, you know, if you want to get your tickets, get them early. That's all I can say for you. All right, so we'll have more about C2E2 in upcoming weeks. I'm probably going to be mentioning a lot on the show. Anyway, so like I said, we are going to be covering another fantastic issue from Silver Age Marvel. In this case, we're going to be covering Thor number 161. So let's go ahead and play our intro.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard.
Indeed, and Thor number 161 has a cover date of February 1969, retailed for 12 cents. Cover art is by Jack Kirby and Vinnie Coletta, and shows Thor kind of dodging ray blasts being fired back and forth by Ego, the Living Planet, and Galactus. And the two of them are just kind of face-to-face blasting each other. Now, I thought Ego was the size of a planet, which obviously he would be. And Galactus is much smaller than a planet, I thought. But here it looks as though they're pretty much the same size. And Thor is much smaller, but still trapped between them. He's very, very large indeed. So either Ego is ridiculously small on the cover, or Thor is ridiculously large on the cover. Either way, it's one of those covers that doesn't need to be literal. Anyway, it's a beautiful cover here by Jack Kirby, and the cover blurb says, "Shall a god prevail?" It's not asking a question. It has an exclamation point after it. So we open up to the splash page, and we have the credits. Stan the Man Lee and Jack King Kirby produced this story. Vinnie Coletta was the embellisher, and the letterer was Sam Rosen. Title of the story, Shall a God Prevail? This time with a question mark. And we pick up where we left off last issue. Thor and the Recorder, as you recall, were trying to intervene in the fight between Ego and Galactus, and they got their ship destroyed by this rock barrier that I guess, Ego had kind of set after Galactus, destroyed the ship. And the two of them are floating here in space. We see Thor here with his hammer tucked in his belt, and his hammer seems to have shrunk. I won't make the predictable shrinkage jokes, but you know what? I can understand why your hammer might get smaller in the frigidness of space. And we get a little bit of recap here. Searching for the dread Galactus amidst the limitless reaches of space, Mighty Thor and the emotionless Recorder are helplessly flung into an airless vacuum when their starship is shattered by the battle between Galactus and the living planet Ego. And so they drift, silently, endlessly, while a universe totters. And we see them fly. We have a beautiful double page spread here, and it's one of those Jack Kirby collages where he has picked apparently random pictures of machinery, and I don't know what all these things are, but you know, it's very imaginative. And of course, you know, Jack Kirby was nothing if not imaginative, and it's a beautiful collage. And we get another one a little bit later, which is cool too. So we see Thor and the Recorder, and they're floating around. Now, I don't understand why the Recorder is kind of floating in space helpless, because we've already seen he can fly through space without a ship. He's a robot, so it doesn't really matter. I can kind of understand with Thor. And the narrator continues, "But then, as Thunder God and thinking android alike drift aimlessly through the icy, inky emptiness of airless space, a hovering starship glides ever closer." And it's the ship we saw last issue with those, the gloopy orange chicken-like guys on it. And they see the two heroes floating in space, and they say, Two there are who have survived the Holocaust. Let them now be brought aboard." So they bring the two of them aboard. They kind of suck them in through a tube, like a straw going. And within seconds, the two silent figures are swiftly drawn into the pressurized bowels of a gigantic vacuum cylinder, leading to a high-velocity pneumatic tube. Much like the drive-through of the bank, which speeds them ever deeper into the core of the mighty ship, until they are finally hurled into a shielded chamber filled with a bubbling solution of therapeutic vital liquid, which is gonna do wonders for this robot, I have to say. And we see these, the gloopy orange guys, and they're saying, "They must be revived. Of all the spacecraft in the sector, only they had a definite destination. Too long have we been aimless wanderers. We shall make their goal our own." You kind of got to love it how these guys are just kind of trusting Thor and the Recorder to know where they're going, especially after they've just been destroyed. We then get a full page spread here of Ego, and this is Ego drawn rather than Ego in collage form, blasting his eye blasts at Galactus's cube. You know, it's sort of like his shuttlecraft that he rides around in. And here we get a better amount of scale here when you compare it to the cover. And Ego is blasting an eye beam out of his right eye, and it's smashing into Galactus' ship. We have beautiful Kirby crackle all over the place. Beautiful coloring job here by, I assume, is somebody like George Russo, one of the production people. "And never before did a goal such as this exist. Never before did two such multi-powered entities as the planet-devouring Galactus and Ego, the living Bioverse, face each other in desperate battle. Though you deem yourself invisible within your flying visisphere, still shall the cosmic destructiblast of the living planet hurl you from me like hapless chunk of space debris." Is it just me, or does this reek of Jack Kirby writing? So far, this whole issue seems to have been dialogued by Jack Kirby. Never before has Galactus faced power incalculable such as that of Ego, but never has the ultimate triumph not been mine.
What madness to you, Mouth? You are but a single being, and I am a world entire.
The words you speak are true. In all of space, I stand alone. But I have no need for an ally, for I am Galactus. The be-all and the end-all am I.
And Galactus has this beautiful Kirby tech sort of gun thing. He's blasting his space weapon at Ego, and he's hurling all these planetoids and drawing them together and just hurling them at the planet. Because, you know, what you want to do to destroy a planet is throw rocks at it. Anyway,
mine is the power to harness the essence of shattered planetoids and draw them together with a single burst of cosmic magni force. A force which can hurl them back at you with the power and the impact of an endless swarm of meteors. Again and again I strike, in ever-increasing measure, in ever-increasing fury, until at last Ego speaks no more. Not even a world can stand against the will of Galactus. And we see that, you know, Ego's taken quite a beating from all these meteorites. Beautiful, beautiful page here showing this endless stream of meteorites battering Ego. And just beautiful detail. And again, the coloring in this issue is second to none. You know, I talked about it last time when we had the full page head of Galactus with just, you know, the way the colors showed the reflections off of his armor and stuff like that. It was beautifully done. And this is kind of a similar situation here. It's just a really nicely colored piece of artwork here. And Galactus is kind of looming up out of his head of his transparent cube. And he seems to have lost parts of his costume. I'm not really sure where that happened, but he now seems to be wearing short sleeves. Yeah, and shorts. But what is this? Says Galactus. What issues forth from the planet's depths? Monstrous living tentacles, space-spanning feelers of solidified energy. They seize me with the sudden speed of thought. And Galactus is grabbed by these psychedelic tentacles. They really are, you know, pink and blue and black, and yeah, they're kind of trippy reaching out and grabbing Galactus. Obviously, we're going to get a little hentai action here.
And with end-shift scenes back to where Thor and the Recorder are on the ship of the orange gloopy chicken-like guys. And Thor wakes up, and the Recorder, I guess, wakes up about the same time. Says,
Recorder, we are within a drifting spacecraft.
I compute we have been observed, rescued, and healed by unknown benefactors. Conclusion, they have saved us, or they have need of our service.
And the door opens, and some of these guys wander in, and they're like,
You are awake. It is good. You may speak freely, since we have studied your tongue with our translator ray whilst you did sleep.
Does that mean that they are talking in their sleep? I want to know what Thor talks about in his sleep.
And Thor says, Who art thou, and how be you called?
We are the Wanderers, so named because we have wandered the spaceways for ages untold.
Now, seems to me that there's another group around called the Wanderers. I wonder who came first. Now this is actually, I'm actually curious now, so I'm actually going to look this up as we speak. The Wanderers at DC were friends of the Legion of Superheroes, and I think they first appeared... I think they may have appeared first, but well, let's find out. Wanderers, Legion, they first appeared... So the Wanderers in the DC Universe first appeared in 1968, so it was just a few months before this. It looks like they first appeared in December of 1968, Adventure Comics, so really only 2 months before this. So DC was first, but not by much. Of course, the Wanderers of DC are a very, very, very... different group of characters. So anyway, so Thor and the Recorder are recovering, and the Wanderers are saying,
Never shall we rest until we have found Galactus and exacted dire vengeance for that which he has done. We had been following your ship, hoping you would lead us to our cursed prey.
Observation, you must abandon your quest. He is too deadly. He will destroy you.
How do you speak with such certainty?
Because I am the Recorder. I observe all, I record all, and what is recorded, I do compute. Such is my function, such is my fate.
Well, for somebody with no emotion, he's still cares about his fate a little bit.
"I be son of Odin, immortal of Asgard," says Thor. "Say no more, God of Thunder. Even in the most remote corner of the cosmos, the name of Thor is spoken whispers."
Why are they afraid to talk him out loud? And they're riding some sort of weird contraption, and I'm not really sure what this is supposed to be, but if it's an escalator, which is what it appears to be, it's a really bizarre and not very well-designed escalator. But, you know, even those unpractical machines that Jack Kirby draws still look pretty darn cool.
"We now bring you to our chamber of decision," says one of them.
And the leader of the gloopy chicken leg guys is... Now, I noticed their body shape has changed in this issue. They don't really have the chicken legs now. They just sort of are gloopy orange humanoids with normal legs. So, again, you know, Kirby inconsistency, etc. What's interesting is that, you know, the chicken legs would actually fit because the leader is wearing, like, this cape that's, like, made of green feathers. So, yeah, maybe they're gloopy bird people. I don't know. Anyway, so the leader's like,
"Wanderers all, heed you my words. The mighty Thor seeks battle with him who has shattered our world. Does the son of Odin fight alone?" "Not so," says the whole crowd.
"I do laud thy valor," says Thor, "but fear for thy lives. Thou art but a handful, to be disposed of by Galactus with naught but a shrug. Whilst I, in truth, am God of Thunder." In other words, you suck, I'm a god, man.
But suddenly, even as the Asgardian speaks... So after Thor is done bragging about himself, we see that there's an alarm going off on the ship, and I guess the watchman or the pilot or whoever he is saying,
"Galactic upheaval ahead! To your stations, all! We have found Galactus!"
And they're coming up on the fight going on between Ego and Galactus, and they're being pelted by the planetoids. Remember, you know, obviously Galactus is pelting Ego with them. They've gotten a little bit too close now, and now these things are hitting the ship, banging off the ship, damaging it, and they're like,
"We've come too close! The flying planetoids ablaze with the fury of battle now strike our ship!"
Once again, we have a full-page spread here of the spaceship being smashed with these planetoids. Beautiful, beautiful piece of Kirby art here. And the ship is being damaged, and Thor shouting orders are,
"Reverse thy course! Thy spacecraft must be saved! When all who value life make haste!"
And Thor and the recorder are heading to the surface of the ship,
"whilst we, silent and unseen, prepare to face the fearsome foe. Observation, the moment is nigh. Now let the universe tremble. Deduction, you are thunderstruck by the sight which looms before you."
And Thor's like, "I swear by Asgard, never have I seen the like." And we have a full page of Thor whirling his hammer around, getting ready to fight. And Thor's like,
"Planet and man, now locked in deadly struggle. But ere the battle be resolved, let Thunder God prevail."
And Thor's getting ready to strike. And we shift scenes to, you know, Galactus is standing on top of his transparent cube thing, which looks like it's too small for him to fit inside. So, I don't know, does Galactus have the ability to get bigger and smaller? I think he does. I seem to recall he does, so that would make sense. And he's broken loose of these tentacles that Ego sent after him.
"No living tentacles, however monstrous, can bind Galactus. Not while I can lure great comets from their path to strike at you until you fight no longer."
And these big comets are striking at Ego, and Ego looks like he's not doing so well here. He's not looking very healthy here. And the recorder's like,
"Observation, the tide has turned. Triumph is within Galactus's reach. I say thee nay. Stand back whilst Thor prepares to act. Whilst the universe doth lie at stake, the God of Thunder shall not fail."
And he's getting ready to attack. And the recorder, for having no emotions, is being really emotional here.
"Perma circuits activated for maximum recording. All that transpires shall be impressed upon my electronic brain. But son of Odin, have a care. Let me not record your death."
So the recorder clearly is not emotionless. I should say, he's the most emotional, emotionless machine I've ever seen.
"Whate'er befalls can only be the will of Odin. And so strikes Thor for Asgard."
And he hurls Mjolnir. And Mjolnir is being hurled at Galactus. And he strikes Galactus like right in the gut. And Galactus is actually staggered by this. He's like,
"I am struck a savage blow. Another has dared defy Galactus's will. For the first time in a millennium, my limbs have tasted pain. He who has the power to cause so monumental an affront must forthwith perish. Such is the will of Galactus. And so Galactus's attention is turned towards Thor. And we see Mjolnir returning to Thor's hand, and Thor launches himself after Galactus, who now is only a little bit bigger than Thor is. So I guess Galactus is growing and shrinking as he needs to, I guess. And Thor says, he doth still stand. Not even enchanted Mjolnir can fell him with a single blow. Observation, if your hammer fails, naught shall remain that I may record. But time and time again shall Mjolnir strike. And where it doth fly, flies Thor. And Thor is flying his way to Galactus. Conks him in the head with Mjolnir, but Galactus has some sort of a force field which is protecting him. The hammer bounces off with a batong. And Galactus is like, by a human form, gnat am I beset. A gnat mayhap, says Thor, but with the power of a god. And the two of them are tangling, and Galactus reaches out and grabs Thor around the waist and is holding him in a position that looks, no, that's not physically possible, but it's Jack Kirby, so you gotta forgive him. Speak the word you will. It matters not to me. If such as you can be a god, then what shall we call the great Galactus? What name must be given to him who possesses power absolute? And he picks up Thor and he hurls him at Ego. And so Thor is just kind of blasting towards Ego. And, you know, Thor has to speak the obvious. I am hurled to yon living planet with a force that is meant to slay me. But another force doth strangely rise to meet me. The world below hath moved to stay my fall. And, that, you know, obviously that's what's happening. Ego doesn't want to be struck by Thor. And he lands gently on the surface because of the Wanderer's machines. And I guess the Wanderers are now... have been rescued by Ego, and they're on the surface.
Ego has brought you here, Thunder God, just as he brought us and our ship while you attacked Galactus.
And we stand together as the final battle looms, says Thor. Observation, the wise man does not fight in vain. Proposition, though we must fall, can you not escape through flight?
Speak not to Thor of base escape. Shall I survive whilst others fall? I say thee nay.
And the Wanderer's like,
then God and Wanderer alike have come to journey's end. Together we strived, together we die.
That almost rhymes.
Galactus has won the ultimate victory.
Is it for this we have endured for ages? For this we have crossed the limitless galaxies? Here to stand on a planet of death and succumb to Galactus together. Thor doesn't want to hear any of this. He's like, never, whilst Thor doth endure. The son of Odin is not so simply vanquished. Still have I the mystic Mjolnir. Still the power which transcendeth all. So then we see that the Wanderers have built this tripod thing, and Thor puts his hammer on the tripod, and it's not very clear from the story, from either from the art or the script, exactly why they are using a tripod to put Thor's hammer on, but he lays it on there. It says, from thy crippled ship we shall erect a stand to house yon mighty mallet. 'Tis done. And the Wanderers all go running off. There shall be unleashed such force as thou hast never known, says Thor. And they all go hide, except for Thor. And maybe it's like, you know, when you have a camera and you put it on a tripod because you want it to be still. Maybe that's the same thing here. I don't know. Anyway, so he grabs the handle of it and starts shouting, in the name of Odin, I do thee grasp. Now, whilst the thunder roars, whilst the storm doth rage, let the godly strength of Thor be one with the hammer supreme. And since such surging power must ever be released, at the my command, I hurl it forth, that it may smite Galactus. And we get these huge lightning bolts bursting off the hammer and shooting off into space. And they strike Galactus, and they seem to be pushing him back. And he's got this glow around him, and he doesn't seem to like this very much. And we get the little bit of narration here. Within the space of a single astrosecond, a cataclysmic surge of Asgardian energy lashes out, engulfing the great Galactus with bands of bludgeoning force waves, waves which hurl him helplessly back to the temporal shelter of his quivering visi-sphere. Why is it quivering? Is it made of jello or something? That makes no sense. Anyway. But still the pressure grows, forcing the invader within his shuddering ship to seek the shelter of his giant starcraft, which lies drifting at the galaxy's edge. And Galactus is not having a good time here. He's like, the agony grows ever greater. It drains my strength as sunlight drains the dark. If I do not flee, then I shall surely perish. And Galactus must not die.
and the Visisphere goes back into his ship, and Galactus's ship takes off. Foosh! Goes off into hyperspace. And because characters in Marvel Comics of this era always have to speak the obvious, Recorder says, "Observation, the starship departs. Conclusion, the battle is ended. The Thunder God has triumphed." "Asgard be praised," says Thor. "The danger is o'er. The galaxy stands." And the chicken leg people are like, "Oh, hail the mighty Thor! But though Galactus has been bested, what of us? Our starship is wrecked beyond repair, and none can live in a world such as this. There's no fertile soil to till, no place to settle, build, or grow. Our scout ship seeks a homing site in vain." And yeah, they're taken off in this sort of stingray looking ship and looking for a place to live. But unexpectedly, things are changing on Ego. Yes, the landscape is changing, and lakes are appearing, and trees are popping up, and so, you know, big old flowers and shit. And we have a little narration here. "Slowly, startlingly, the entire face of the planet begins to change. Where there had been barren wasteland, lush and verdant soil appears. Where there had been arid desert, crystal lakes and streams take shape." And Thor says, "Before our eyes, the land doth change.
What had been hellspawn has become a haven. We do stand in the midst of a miracle."
"'Tis more than miracle. Hast thou forgot? This be a living planet."
And a purple figure begins to grow up out of the ground. I wonder who this is.
"Behold," says Thor, "a figure now doth seem to rise from the very ground below."
"You have given me the gift of life. Now I say to you, can I do less?"
"Thy face," says Thor, "I've seen thy countenance before."
And it's the face that we've seen on Ego, except this now he's a human-sized purple guy.
"I am Ego. For what has here been done this day, I grant you sanctuary. Wanderers, make of me your home. Forever. Until the end of time." And that is Thor number 161. And we will have a few comments about this issue right after this important message.
Hey, Kids Comics!
Hey, Michael!
Yeah?
We need to do a new promo.
A new one?
A new one.
Why?
Because we've moved.
Moved?
Moved. We've moved to a new place. We still read comics.
We do, and we still talk about comics.
Because you can't do a comic book podcast unless you read and talk about comics, because that's kind of stupid. But now, we have a new episode, still available every Thursday, but at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com.
Hey, Kids Comics!
So remember, Hey, Kids Comics has moved to twotruefreaks.libsyn.com. Still, every Thursday. That'll do, won't it?
So just a few comments about Thor number 161. I liked the issue. I thought that it was a pretty good conclusion to the story that was begun last time. Though the story's not quite yet over. We do pick up where this left off next time. This issue ended rather abruptly. And this is one of those things from Marvel's Silver Age that you get every once in a while. It's like the story had to end because they ran out of pages. This literally wrapped up in like three panels. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, yay, happy, you know, all the aliens can live here now. Now, I have to say, if I were one of these wanderers, I don't think I'd want to live on a planet that could change in a matter of moments. Would you? I mean, what if Ego gets pissed off at you? Yeah, what if you're tickling him in the wrong spot or whatever? It doesn't seem to me that a planet that can change this readily would be an ideal home. And I kind of wonder what became of the Wanderers. I suppose that's something that we can find out in future episodes. But I don't think I'd want to live on Ego, the living planet. Would you? Plus that purple guy wandering around always telling you how grateful he is. I don't know about that. Anyway, generally speaking, I like the story and art of this issue. It's very clear that a lot of this issue was written by Jack Kirby. The dialogue just has a certain Jack Kirby-ish tone to it that you could see in the New Gods and the Eternals and some of the issues that Kirby wrote and edited himself. Other parts of the story, however, do seem to have been scripted more by Stan. So it's definitely, to my mind, a group effort, but like a lot of the Tales of Asgard stories, clearly Kirby had a lot to do with the plotting and clearly had to do a lot with the dialogue even in this issue. Artwork is generally pretty strong. Once again, we have a lot of single and double page spreads. I think this is a habit that Kirby was getting into in this era when he'd start running into deadline problems, where, you know, rather than make a half page of this panel, he just blow it up to the size of a full page and save himself some time. But it's beautiful stuff, this. Well rendered, well colored, well inked. And, you know, Coletta, to his credit, did a really nice job on this issue as far as backgrounds. You know, a lot of times on Coletta issues, you don't have backgrounds. And I think a lot of that has to do with what he's given. I think if he's not given a lot of backgrounds, he's not an embellisher in the classic sense of the embellisher, where you're adding detail and adding backgrounds and, you know, making things more full, three-dimensional. I think that in this case, Coletta just kind of is rendering what he's given. And a lot of times, if he's running short on time, he's just not bothering to render some of the stuff he's given. And it was one of the criticisms that Coletta has given. But I like this issue, and I thought that he did a really, really fine job on it. I love this outer space stuff that Kirby does, and you get the planets and the comets and the Kirby crackle. You get this epic fight between Ego and Galactus. Now, I'm going to leave out the complaints about how Galactus gets bigger and smaller sort of at a whim. Maybe that's just the way the character works, but it's not consistent. I know that Galactus can get bigger and smaller at will, but generally, I don't think his ship does. And that's one of the problems that we have here, is Galactus is always bigger than his Visi cube, but he's not always the same size when you compare him to Thor. He's not always the same size when you compare him to Ego. We have to remember, Ego is the size of a planet. He's much, much, much larger than he appears to be in this issue. Even if he's a small planet, he's still much, much larger. It's hard to denote that scale in the comic. And it's like they're not even trying. I guess the average audience for this comic back in the 1960s didn't look at this and say, wait, he's supposed to be a lot bigger than that. He's a planet. And, you know, they'd be absolutely correct in pointing that out. But at the same time, I think that a lot of times they just didn't care. It's just a cool comic story with awesome art and pretty good writing, too. Now, to be fair, I really don't care that much for the characters of the Wanderers. That is, the orange, gloopy, chicken leg people. They're just not interesting to me. They really don't do anything. They get their ship destroyed. They have to land on the planet. They build a stand, like a tripod for Mjolnir. Once again, they don't really explain that to my satisfaction. Why do you need a stand for Mjolnir? He's never needed a stand for Mjolnir before. I think that they could have made this a lot more plausible if Stan had added a few lines. Okay, we've created this special stand that enhances Mjolnir's power. And that would have solved the whole problem. But they don't bother doing that. So that's a little bit of an oversight, I think, in an otherwise fine issue. The Recorder continues to bother me a little bit, not because I don't like the character, because I do like the character, but because he's not portrayed consistently. The Recorder shows a great deal of emotion for a character that's not supposed to have any emotion at all. It's even worse than the inconsistent portrayal of Mr. Spock in the original Star Trek, where there are times when you have that emotion just below the surface. I kind of get it with Spock, though, because after all, you know, this is supposed to be a living being. It's not supposed to be a robot. But in this case, we actually have a robot who's not programmed to have emotion. It's almost like the Machine Man from the 2001 Space Odyssey, which I talked about last time, you know, meeting the monolith and then becoming like this living robot. And he has the full emotions of a human, except, it's sort of a similar situation to that. And indeed, I think the Recorder in this issue and the last issue looks a lot like Machine Man. It's almost as though Jack Kirby remembered the character of the Recorder and deliberately went back to this particular well for that 2001 Space Odyssey issue. And I wonder to myself if his original intention was to have the Recorder be that character. The two of them do look incredibly similar. You even get that same sort of weird wavy thing in the eyes that Machine Man had in his very first appearance that he lost later. Of course, in the later appearances of Machine Man, he was being drawn by other artists, and there were other changes as well. But Jack Kirby definitely has, as far as these humanoid robots go, a very similar look. So I don't know if that's just Jack Kirby reverting to a character body type that he is accustomed to, or whether that was something that was deliberately planned when he was doing those early Mr. Machine, Machine Man stories in 2001 Space Odyssey. There have been a lot of times when I've wished that Jack Kirby was still around, and I would love to be able to ask him that question and know what he was actually thinking when he created the recorder, when he created Machine Man, and tried to figure out, well, was this deliberate or was this accidental? All right, so with that, it's time to wrap up the show for this week. Thanks again very much, folks, for listening. And as always, we hope to hear from you. We do have an email address that you can write to, and that email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. You can also find us on the Facebooks. Just look for Radio Free Asgard there, and you will find us. So from all of us in Chicago, Illinois, thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next week here on Radio Free Asgard. Radio Free Asgard is copyright Tom Harris USA Productions, which is totally responsible for its content. The Mighty Thor and all related characters are copyright Marvel Comics. Any other characters that appear on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders. We don't own any of this as much as we'd like to. The stories covered on this podcast are for entertainment, educational, and review purposes only. If you like what you've heard on today's program, please tell your friends, drop an iTunes review, or join our Facebook group. Music from Eden, the Invincible Sword of the Elfsmith, is copyright Mott's Vent and is used with permission because Mott's is simply awesome. Radio Free Asgard should not be downloaded while pregnant, nursing, or operating heavy machinery, and we are not responsible for any damages incurred as the result of this misuse. Side effects may include being lost in a cave and finding a magical hammer and falling in love with Jane Foster. Once again, thank you for listening to Radio Free Asgard.